Officer Judy Hopp has wanted to be a police officer in the big city of Zootopia ever since she can remember. And you know what? She got her wish. She got on the force, but you know what she finds out? Bunnies aren't well respected when it comes to being a police officer. So she ends up a meter maid. But she gets her chance to be a real cop when residents of the city begin to disappear. However, Judy Hopps has a lot to learn. Enter her teacher, Nick Wilde, the fox. Now, he's not a willing participant in Judy's adventure. As a matter of fact, when he first meets her, he cons her in a popsicle scheme. But Judy's a very fast learner. She's no dumb bunny. And she learns, you know what? To outsmart a fox, you have to learn to think like a fox. And so we have been looking at this little sermon series about the person Jacob. We called it selfie-centered because we want to look at the idea that a lot of times in our life, we focus our life on us, on me. Much like those camera shots that you see all across the internet now, they post them on Instagram, they put them on Snapchat, they put them on Facebook, they seem to be everywhere. Everybody wants to be taking selfies this year, this time around. And you know what? The problem is, we discovered that being a self-centered person has some bad things. See, we began to look at Jacob and his self-centeredness. We found out it has just utterly destroyed his relationships. After all, he's conned his brother. He lied to his dad. Last week, in the middle of nowhere, he devalued God when God offered him eternity. He asked for such a little bit. And it's important for us to remember that, you know what? When we live self-centered, the people around us, those that were called to see the light through our life, they begin to suffer. So today, that theme is going to kind of continue as we're going to look at the next set of relationships that Jacob manages to destroy. That would be his marriage and his family. You know, you think that when you get married and when you have kids, you figure out how you're supposed to not be self-centered, but Jacob didn't seem to. And so we're going to begin to take a look at how Jacob's self-centered life impacted the other guys around him. But the first thing Jacob finds out is Jacob meets a fox that's a whole lot smarter than him. So we're going to talk today about how the fox gets outfoxed. Outfoxing the fox is what's going to happen today. And remember where we left off last week? Remember, Jacob had taken his journey. He's got a 500-mile journey. He's about 3 or 4 days into. So right now, Jake, when we left Jacob, he's kind of sitting in the middle of nowhere with nothing but himself and a stick. Doesn't even have a pillow. And well, by the time we turn the page and we get to chapter 29, this is what it reads. Jacob arrives. Then Jacob continued on his journey and came to the land of the eastern people. There he saw a well in the open country with three flocks of sheep lying near it. Man, just what a fox likes, right? Sheep. Near it because the flocks were watered from that well. The stone over the mouth of the wall was large. When all the flocks were gathered, the shepherds would roll the stone away from the well's mouth and water the sheep. Then they would return the stone to its place over the mouth of the well. Jacob asked the shepherd, "My brothers, where are you from?" "We're from Haran," they replied. He said to them, "Do you know Laban, Nahor's grandson?" "Yes, we know him," they answered. Then Jacob asked them, "Is he well?" "Yes, he is," they said. "And here comes his daughter Rachel with the sheep." So Jacob arrives, and he gets there, and he gets to, I guess this is like the water cooler, right? I mean, you have those points in your office where everybody seems to gather. Maybe it's the donut table. But this is where everybody gathers. This is the meeting place of the town. This is the well, and it's kind of the only water supply within a good distance. So everybody comes to this particular well. And so when Jacob arrives, that's where he goes, and he sees these people there. And immediately, who does he see? There's Rachel. And just so you know, it's love at first sight. The fox is going to fall in love, but we'll get to that in just a moment. Because before Jacob falls in love, Jacob meets the actual fox. See, Jacob's been sent there for the entire purpose of finding a wife. And well, he's supposed to find a wife from his mother's family. And well, that means he's got to find Uncle Laban. And well, this is Uncle Laban, verses 12 through 14. He had told Rachel that he was a relative of her father and a son of Rebekah. So she ran and told her father. As soon as Laban heard the news about Jacob, his sister's son, he hurried to meet him. He embraced him and kissed him and brought him to his home. And there Jacob told him all these things. Do you think Jacob told him everything? You think Jacob filled him in on how he had conned Esau out of his birthright? You think he had filled him in how he had lied to Isaac? You think he told him about the dream? I wonder what these things were, what Jacob actually told Laban. But then Laban said to him, "You are my own flesh and blood." After Jacob stayed in his house for a whole month, man, how'd you like to have that kind of a Christmas visitor? They just show up from the middle of nowhere, and you know what? Now he's going to be a house guest for a month. Laban said to him, "Just because you're a relative of mine, should you not work for me for nothing? Tell me what your wages should be." So as we read this story, we get this picture, one big happy family, right? Because here they are, and he arrives, and Laban's all happy to see him. I am certainly glad we result to handshakes these days, because Laban comes out and kisses him, hopefully on the cheek. But they welcome him, and he takes him back to the house, and he begins to welcome him and begins to make it look good. And Laban finds out something very quickly. He's going to have a good thing going. I mean, with Jacob, you remember back there at that dream, what did God say? He said, "I am going to bless you." And God was true to his word, because everywhere Jacob went, things just seemed to work for Jacob. And so if you're Laban and Jacob moves in with you and things start going good, what do you want to figure out how to do? How do I keep him right where he is? Well, the good news is, the old fox Laban has the ultimate bait to keep the young fox Jacob right where he needs to be. You see, because Jacob falls for a fox. This is what it says in verses 16 through 20. Now, Laban had two daughters. The name of the older was Leah, and the name of the younger was Rachel. Leah had weak eyes, but Rachel had a lovely figure and was beautiful. Jacob was in love with Rachel and said, "I'll work for 7 years in return for your younger daughter, Rachel." Laban said, this is a resounding review of his daughter, "It's better that I give her to you than to some other man. Stay with me here." So Jacob served for 7 years to get Rachel. But they seemed like only a few days to him because of his love for her. Aw, isn't that cute? It just gives you that warm little fuzzy here. Now, I told you last week that this story isn't going to be all nice and shiny. We could just take this story and port it over into the modern day world. We could put it on primetime and we could make a soap opera out of it. Well, here it comes, because it's very romantic, but Jacob is a little short-sighted. Remember, these are biblical times. So now Jacob is going to go to work for what he should have actually gotten paid for. Huh? Well, remember, he was sent by his dad to get a wife from here. And Jacob is family, so the deal should have been Rachel should have come with a dowry, not a payment plan. But Jacob is so short-sighted, and Jacob is so much in the moment, and Jacob's so much in, "I want what I want, and I want it now," and Laban takes advantage of Jacob. Not once, but twice. So the old fox Laban looks at Jacob, and he realizes that, you know what? I am going to out-fox the fox. And the first time we find out that the deal gets made in verses 21 through 25. Then Jacob said to Laban, "Give me my wife. My time is complete. I want to make love to her." So Laban brought together all the people of the place and gave a feast. But when evening came, he took his daughter Leah and brought her to Jacob. And Jacob made love to her. And Laban gave his servant Zilpah to his daughter as her attendant. When morning came, there was Leah. So Jacob said to Laban, "What have you done to me? I served you for Rachel, didn't I? Why have you deceived me?" So 7 years have now passed. Jacob has been to work every single day. He's tended the sheep. He's watered them, sheared them, dealt with it. All the time focused on his prize, the one he loves, beautiful Rachel. Now, I don't know what Laban did. I don't know if he got Jacob drunk. I don't know if they put a disguise on Leah. I don't know if he slipped a little Mickey to Jacob in the middle of the night. I don't know what happened. But you know what Laban does? He realizes, well, once Jacob gets Rachel, what's Jacob going to do? Jacob's going to go home. Well, I can get a two for one here. I can get rid of the daughter that nobody wants, and at the same time figure out a way to get Jacob to stay for another 7 years. So he pulls the old switcheroo, and Jacob thinks he's got his beautiful Rachel, and he winds up with Leah. And there's no getting out of it. He now has a wife. Now, I guess the scriptural thing that he should have done is he should have just taken Leah and should have went and made his family and done the thing. Oh, no. Oh, no. Laban goes the next little step in his little deception. Jacob goes and says, "Hey, you deceived me. Look at the wily old fox." Laban replied, "It is not our custom here to give the younger daughter in marriage before the older one." Yeah, Jacob, I wanted to honor the deal that I gave you, but you know what? We had this rule, we had this law, we had this tradition that, you know what? The older daughter has to get married before the younger. It's not my fault. I had to deceive you, but if you want Rachel, we had to get Leah out the way. How do you think this made Leah feel? I mean, she's not even the consolation prize. She's like the unwanted thing that just got passed off just so he could get to what he wanted, so he could get to Rachel. So Laban shoots him this line, and this is what he then begins to say. "Finish this daughter's bridal week, then I will give you the younger one also in return for another 7 years' work." You know what? I think Laban's pretty good here. He's pretty smart, isn't he? I mean, he's got Jacob over a barrel because Jacob's in love with Rachel. He says, "You know what? Go on your honeymoon. Have your time with Leah, and then when you're done, come back, I'll give you Rachel, but you have to agree to work another 7 years." And you know what? If I would have been Jacob, I'd have said no. But you know what? It's called a hustle, sweetheart. And Jacob bites. And Jacob did so. He finished the week with Leah, and then Laban gave him his daughter, Rachel, to be his wife. Laban gave his servant Bithla, by the way, the servant's names aren't unimportant, keep them in your head here, to his daughter Rachel as her attendant. So now Jacob has his lovely Rachel, but what else does he have? He has Leah. Jacob has literally too many wives. And so this is going to cause all kind of problems when it comes to the idea of going home to the foxhole. See, because this is how their family relation starts. Jacob made love to Rachel also, and his love for Rachel was greater than his love for Leah, and he worked for Laban another 7 years. So now we have a problem, because Jacob's got two wives, but he loves one more than the other. Now, I called it at home in the foxhole because a foxhole has two different definitions to it. It's a den or a burrow of a fox, so it's where foxes live. But it's also a hole in the ground used by troops as a shelter against enemy fire or as a firing point. Just so you know, this is what Jacob got. This is what Jacob got. Yeah, he got a home, he got a foxhole, he got a den, but he also got a war zone on his hand. You see, because now all of these things are going to start to happen to Jacob. All of this stuff is going to start unraveling because the fox has indeed been outfoxed. Jacob is about to learn some lessons about what it means to be manipulated. Because you know what? The fallout begins as you turn the page to verse 30. Now, we're not going to read another whole chapter, I'm just going to kind of give you the highlights here because you're really not going to believe this. This sounds like something Hollywood would have came up with. So the first thing that happens is we get a jealousy competition going on. Leah over the fact that Rachel was more loved. Now, if you're thinking about Leah, Leah is like, you know what? I was here first. I'm the older daughter. I married him first. He's my husband. Well, Rachel's like, well, you know what? He was tricked into marrying you. He really loved me. He loves me more. And so there's this competition going on. But then Leah gets the ultimate leveling point because guess what? She can do something Rachel can't. She starts producing babies. Boys at that. That thing that God had promised about all the descendants coming to you. You got to have some male heirs for this to work. And so Leah begins to have children. And Rachel is left barren. So this competition begins to set up. Of course, some old Rachel has a solution for this competition. It's called adultery. Verse 3 of chapter 30 says, then she says to Bilhah, remember, this is the servant that was given to her to help her take care of herself. My servant, here is Bilhah, my servant, sleep with her so that she can bear children for me and I too can build a family through her. Didn't we already do this once in our life? Did Jacob not learn anything from Abraham? Did Jacob not learn anything from Hagar? Did he not learn anything from Ishmael? This idea that now Rachel said, well, I can't have kids, and I can't let my sister undo this, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to take my slave, and I'm basically going to give her to my husband to sleep with her so that he can produce children that way. That fixes the problem. Of course, Leah's not going to be outdone because now this isn't fair, right? It's two against one. So in verses 9 through 10, when Leah saw that she stopped having children, she took her servant, Zilpah, and gave her to Jacob as a wife. Leah's servant, Zilpah, bore Jacob a son. Then Leah said, what good fortune, so she named him Gad. So now how many wives has Jacob got? Now he's got four. Is he crazy? I mean, he's got four wives, and he's got numerous kids, and Jacob is sitting here in this madhouse, and Jacob doesn't see what's happening. His family is becoming dysfunctional. How dysfunctional? Well, let's take a look at Genesis chapter 30, verses 14 through 16. And I'll explain this afterwards if you don't get it. During the wheat harvest, Reuben was one of Leah's sons, went out into the fields and found some mandrake plants. So basically, these are greens, okay? Found some mandrake plants, which he brought to his mother, Leah, Rachel, and said, please give me, or to his mother Rachel said to Leah, please give me some of your son's mandrakes. But she said to her, wasn't it enough that you took my husband away? Will you take my son's mandrakes too? Very well, Rachel said. He can sleep with you tonight in return for some of your son's mandrakes. Isn't that kind of fitting? Jacob stole a birthright for a bowl of beans, and now he's being traded for a bucket of salad. It's incredible, right? I mean, they're actually sitting here fighting over not who gets to sleep with Jacob, but what will you give me so I don't have to sleep with Jacob? I mean, he's being passed from one to the other, and around he goes, and he's got no relationship with anything. So when Jacob came home from the fields that evening, Leah went out to meet him. You must sleep with me tonight, she said. Here's the funny part. I have hired you with my son's mandrakes. So he slept with her that night. Can you not see the humor in Jacob's situation here? Jacob had worked so hard to get himself ahead in the world. Jacob had worked so hard to have all of this stuff. And now he's not even worth a bucket of salad greens that somebody pulled out of a field. I mean, oh my gosh. Has the fox been outfoxed? Absolutely. See, Jacob spent his entire life being so selfie-centered that all it did was produce more selfie-centeredness. Jacob spent his entire life taking advantage of people, and now God teaching him the lesson because guess what? Now he's the one being taken advantage of. And he's getting it from all sides. He's got four wives, lots of kids, and he's got a family that, you know what? We haven't even gotten to the best part yet. When I say the best part, the most dysfunctional part. See, the fallout continued. It included rape, murder, abuse, favoritism. One of his sons got sold into slavery by his brothers. And then after they sold him into slavery, they turned back around and lied to dad and said that he got killed by a wild animal. And then you know what? It just keeps going and going and going and going. And Jacob is just trapped. Jacob is just caught. And I look at this story and I think, where did he go wrong? I mean, after all, he was just a few chapters ago, he was there in Haran. And he was there in Bethel. He was there with God. And God said, you know what? I'm going to bless you. This doesn't sound like a blessing. This sounds like a curse. But you do understand, just like the rainy days in our life, if you want to find out who God is eventually, you've got to take your eyes off of yourself. When Jacob arrived in Haran, if he had taken the godly path to what he was doing, then you know what? He would have never found himself in this mess. He probably would have ended up with Rachel. He probably would have been heading home. Things would have been all going well. But you know what? When I'm constantly looking at myself, I want you to see something here. God says, okay, I'll let you do it. I'll let you go ahead and make your life like you want it. You can build your house however you want it. You can have as many wives as you want, Jacob. You'll have kids just like I promised. I'll keep my end of the deal. But you have to understand what's going to happen with your life. You see, Jacob learned the hard way. A selfie-centered life produces selfie-centered lives. Do you think that's true? You know, I was a youth minister for many years, and the song has not changed. I mean, even though it's been a few generations since I've done this with teenagers, I understand. I used to hear it all the time. Well, those kids of today, they just don't get it. Our generation would never do that. My generation did this. And you know what the reality is? If you begin to peel back the layers, one generation is not different from the other. One generation is built on the previous generation. You see, what we're watching in our society today is the seeds that we've sown in the past coming to roost. You want to know why we have such sexual sins in our society? Go back and look at the generation in front of us and the one in front of that. Sure, it was something that I would never do that, but as time began to go, we gradually began to walk down this path, and God allowed us to do it. And you know what? The next generation is going to say the same thing. When the kids get older, we're going to say, we can't believe what they're doing. And you know what? The thing is, just look. You think Jacob ever had that moment? When he sat there and looked at his family, and their family is dealing with all of the stuff that's going on, the rapes, the murders, the selling. You ever, Jacob, think of use that phrase, well, what did I ever do to deserve this? You see, this is the big moment that Jacob has to learn. Jacob has to learn, if I want to produce a generation focused on God, step one is not giving them a bunch of rules and regulations and telling them how good things used to be. Step one is I have to start living for God. It is the number one rule that they teach you when you're dealing with teenagers or with kids. Kids are not looking for somebody to be like them. They are looking for somebody they can be like. They are looking for a role model, an example, somebody they can pattern their life out of. And if we don't give it to them, you know what? They will find it. They will find their role models. They will find their examples. And it may not be the ones that we want. And then we're going to look at our generation and we're going to say, what happened? How did we end up here? You see, it's time that we get a little focus in our life. Now, this is hard. Because you know what? I'm a selfie-centered kind of guy. I like things the way I like them. I get frustrated if things aren't like how I want them to work. It irritates me when things don't work. We went out and we ordered a new Christmas tree this year, and it came in, and I went to put it together, and guess what? They sent the wrong base. So I'm sitting here trying to put this tree together, and it doesn't fit in the base they sent me. Oh my gosh, my face turned red. I got irritated. I want to take the whole thing and dump it out in the trash. We decided to box it up and send it back so I could get my money back. But you know what? I like things to work my way. But you know what? I also have to realize that my way isn't God's way. The way that I want things to work isn't necessarily the way God needs things to work. Jacob didn't need four wives to fulfill God's promise. He really only needed one. But his self-centeredness led him down a path that just kept going and going and going. And if you read all the way through Jacob's family, you're thinking, oh my gosh, Hollywood needs to pick up the Bible and read. They don't need scripts. They just need scripture. Because the stories are horrifying. And I think if we look at our lives, sometimes we do the same thing. How did we get here? We got here because we lost focus. We get to where we are in our lives because we've turned the camera toward ourselves and we've said, look at me. Make me comfortable. Make me happy. Make me satisfied. And God is saying, you know what? Let's take the camera off of ourselves. Let's take a look at the camera and let's turn it toward God. And as we turn it toward God, we're going to see other people in that process.